Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Damon Barr, rocking some sort of Ireland sweatshirt, proudly. Hope you're doing okay. Gray and not as cold as it could be. We are in the throes of February. Some basketball to discuss. Tough one in Champaign, but you knew that was going to happen. Can this week get better for the Big Red? Well, spend some time on that. Mitch Sherman coming up. Excited to talk to Mitch. Great sit down with Mitch Sherman and Westside prospect and product Levante Dickerson as part of Nebraska's ever-expanding list of major 2021 kids in the 500-mile radius, and that one's in the 50-mile radius. So Mitch Sherman's coming up. A lot of NFL to get into between free agency and what is likely here with Tom Brady. What's going to happen with Diggs from Minnesota? Are people going to be on the move? Is the NFL Combine got going this weekend, and it's a week-long event in Indianapolis. We're excited to talk with Russ Landy. Longtime NFL analyst, and he's part of the scouting crew up at the CFL, but still locked in. He is in Indianapolis. We'll get his take on this 2020 draft class, and he'll have some thoughts on some Huskers. So, Russ Landy, next hour, you can join us, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825 5865, numbers to get in. We'll hear from Joe Burrow. I love seeing Joe Burrow just kind of taking questions and throwing them back. Good luck and God bless, Joe. You'll end up in Cincinnati, and I hope you and Zach Taylor have a long, healthy, vibrant career. First time I've said that about Cincinnati since Boomer Esiason was in there chucking touchdowns. So a lot of football, a lot of basketball to get to. Also some crop reporting. With the seedings, as we're less than a month away from the NCAA tournament. You can find us on Twitter. Give us a follow. Chris Schmidt at Schmidt underscore radio, at Damon Barr, at Damon Barr with two R's, and can email Chris at HaleVarsity.com. There is another Democratic debate, which means we will invoke one Damon Barr. We will play candidates on the stage and what NFL 2020 quarterback they would be. That is coming up in about an hour and 40. So our friends at 24/7 Sports have a list out. This is from Bud Elliott. College football coaches facing pivotal seasons in 2020. So 2020 is going to be a fascinating year for Nebraska football. When you look at the opener with Purdue, you look at the close of the schedule with Ohio State, with Wisconsin, with Iowa, with Minnesota, with Penn State, I mean, all consecutively. And, you know, what is your Nebraska football team gonna look like? How are they going to navigate the close to the year, the start to the year, and what's it mean for the Big Red? First things first, continue hammering yourselves with winter conditioning, and then get to spring ball, do summer workouts, and get locked in for an important 2020. But when it comes to pivotal college football seasons and coaches that need good years, pivotal does not, and I repeat, this is in black and it's capitalized, this does not equal a hot seat list from the 24/7 Sports writer. But he does have a list of coaches that they believe 2020 is a pivotal year. Guess who's number one on the list? And it's not even a 1-8 deal. But the first guy mentioned in this story is Scott Frost. This list of coaches for whom the 2020 season could be pivotal in their tenure at their current schools and thus their career. Scott Frost is front and center out of the gate. Native Nebraskan Scott Frost has gone 9-15 so far at Nebraska, showing minimal improvement of one win from year one to year two. That's the improvement. You jumped a whopping one win. The Nebraska Cornhuskers have finished fifth in the Big Ten West Division both seasons. Nebraska administration has tremendous patience for Frost, having just extended his contract by two seasons. While Frost is likely safe as long as Nebraska manages to get back to a bowl, there could be lack of momentum, which could stifle recruiting and begin to erode support. Nebraska draws Ohio State and Penn State from the East this season, but it will be important for the Cornhuskers to fare better against their Western Division foes. All of that is true. You draw Ohio State. You go to Ohio State. You host Penn State. And then can you put some headway together in the West? Iowa, good. Beatable. Minnesota, good. Beatable. Wisconsin, very, very good. Beatable. And when I think about the word pivotal, it's like the guy's tenure is riding on what happens in 2020. I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a second. You, the Nebraska fans, you're real. What I think you want to see is going to a bowl, yeah. So is the head coach, so is the quarterback, so is the third team kicker, okay? Everybody wants to see progress, and I think you felt good about where you were going to go year one to year two from a progression, and it didn't happen. I think what you need to see, what I need to see from Nebraska, they're going to keep hunting it and humping it on the recruiting trail. They are going to keep kind of injecting that culture and chemistry. And I, you know, don't throw things at the movie screen like we're watching Animal House here. You know, Ken Dorfman shows up on screen. John Belushi screams and they start throwing empty beer bottles. It's a great scene. Listen, no one's there yet with Nebraska or Scott Frost. And the truth of the matter is Scott Frost will get as long as Scott Frost wants. And he should get as long as Scott Frost wants. Okay, the reason Nebraska is in this situation of shuffling, and the reason Nebraska is in this scramble mode, it feels like, is because people get a hit put out on them every 3 or 4 or 5 years in this program since Osborne. Period. That's why Nebraska sucks. Or has sucked. They don't suck now. But they got to be better in big games. You keep shuffling personnel and coaches and philosophies and styles. No consistency. It's going to be a bleep show. Nebraska right now is going to have 3 years in a system offensively and defensively. What they got to do is figure out how to be better on Saturday, finish some games, win some close games, okay? I can't stress that enough. We'll talk to Mitch Sherman. And you just got to go do it. It's got to happen. And you can't fall off offensively or with your quarterback, in all honesty, to be bad in close ball games. I mean, you won a couple. You won one against Northwestern. You didn't win one against Iowa. You didn't win one against Colorado. It hurts. And you were right there. In the first season. Different roster, different kids, different senior leadership. So when I think of the term pivotal for Nebraska football, I think it is important. I think it's important from a morale standpoint for Nebraska to get to a bowl game. I think it's important from a morale standpoint for Nebraska to find a way to beat a Minnesota, Wisconsin, or Iowa, beat one of those three, beat two of those three. I think it's important to play within a touchdown to 10 points of Penn State at home. And I think it's important to go into the fourth quarter against an Ohio State that's really good, but they're losing a hell of a lot. Russ Landy will tell you in an hour about some of the Ohio State prospects going to the NFL. Listen, It's not ready-made. You can't snap your fingers and make it happen, but they got to be better at executing. They got to be better at knowing what they want to do, and they got to be better defensively, and they got to be better offensively. I mean, it's a whole team thing. That's clearly obvious, but I don't think the painting or the story of Scott Frost will be determined after year three. They got to go to a bowl. They got to beat Purdue to get things kicked off. They got to beat Cincinnati. And then they got to navigate, not necessarily through wins. It's not ribbon day where everyone gets one. But you can, as a Nebraska fan, you can look and say, that team's loaded that Nebraska just played. Go down the list. The Washingtons, the Miamis, the Florida States, Oklahoma, Colorado. I mean, we're talking heyday teams. And if you go out there and give it your all and you play respectable and you play tough and you play physical and you don't look like a mess and you get beat by 10 points, so Nebraska fans will be like, hey, that's a good football team. It happens. There's a gap and there's a different level. I think that's what's pivotal about Nebraska football in 2020. It's pivotal that Nebraska doesn't make disorganized mistakes in close ball games. It's critical Nebraska doesn't give up a special teams blunder in a very tight ball game. And it's critical that Nebraska, and very pivotal, I'd say, that Nebraska finds a way to be the playmaker in 2020 versus having those game-changing moments slip away against them. That's where I'm at with this, between pivotal and important.
I agree for the most. I think one thing I'm looking forward to see is if we can lose by the other team winning instead of us shooting ourselves in the foot. If that starts to change, I feel like that's a really big turnaround that a lot of people mm-hmm. are going to see, and they're going to appreciate that, because it's not like, oh, if we did this differently, if we did this. But sometimes you're just outclassed as a football team.
Sometimes the guys at Wisconsin on 3rd and 3 are going to get a first down.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can really do about that.
You can keep busting it in the weight room, and you can keep mm-hmm. trying to be tougher and more physical. But yeah, how are you losing? Mm-hmm. Is it as much at your hand versus the other team? And you feel like Nebraska just stepped on themselves the last 2 years too many times. I think that's very fair. How are you losing? It's one thing to get outclassed and someone slam it down your throat. It's another thing to have a false start and go from 3rd and 8 to 3rd and 13 in the final moment. It's one thing to, do I run out of bounds or do we go 2-minute drill? Somebody communicate to the quarterback what is wanted. And that the management needs to be better, because you've got some players. You absolutely do. You've got a good group of offensive linemen coming back. You have a really talented secondary defensively, and you got a really good secondary coach. It's there for you. Is pivotal the right word? I think Nebraska, if they don't go to a bowl game this year, I think there'll be some real, real frustration, and then you might have some doubt creep in. Now, doubt is different than get out of town, because I'm not there. I am done being there. I have not been there with Bo. I was not there with the Bo Riley change. I had seen enough of Riley, and it's not personal. I just, you knew where this was going to go. It was all fluff, all foam versus substance. They had some good kids recruited, but it was just a different managerial style that didn't work, and you've got to unscrew that up. Where you can't treat 18 to 22 year olds, you can't treat all 18 to 22 year olds like they're pros already. Some are ready for that responsibility. Jeremiah Searles, yeah, ready for that responsibility. Amir Abdullah, ready for that responsibility. Some other guys, no. You tell them that they don't have to be back till midnight curfew? Are they resting their bodies for an 11 a.m. kickoff? I don't know. More coaches that are facing a pivotal 2020, Tom Herman, fair, because as pissed as you are about Nebraska's lack of being able to close things in 2020, at least you're not Texas, where you go to a Sugar Bowl, you beat UGA, and then you absolutely suck next year with a returning quarterback, this year is what I'm talking about. And you barely squeak into a bowl game, and you have to blow out a lot of your staff. Jimbo Fisher, I know they're paying the guy a ton. A&M was good. A&M had a murderous schedule. They need to get more credit. A&M was 1-5 against the three West heavyweights, LSU, Auburn, Alabama. Guess what? A&M, aside from Johnny Football's Heisman year, is constantly 1-5 against the three heavyweights in the West. That's what you are as A&M. UCLA, do they kind of shift it around? Kevin Sumlin at Arizona, Clay Helton, he's got some nice hires on his staff, but is it just for a year? So pivotal's a big word, and I would go important versus pivotal, and Nebraska's absolutely working to make 2020 not only a postseason bowl eligibility type season, but maybe finish things out strong. I mean, can you go play good football, and if you don't win, you at least you're right there. You felt that way how 18 finished. You felt like a lot of things slipped away in 2019 because you had leads. So can you put it all together and be a more mature football team, a more mature staff with decision-making and execution and communication? Mitch Sherman's coming up at Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We'll head to Indianapolis NFL Combine and take a look at this quarterback class and some Huskers that are in the Pajama Olympics. We welcome in Mitch Sherman from The Athletic. At Mitch Sherman on Twitter is where you follow him and read him. Mitch, busy week for you, man. How you doing?
It is a busy week. I'm doing well. Got to finish out February strong, so here we are.
You know, how are you? I'm good. You and I are both taking heart that winter conditioning.
And it's the last week of it, you know. Then we got a week off before spring ball and new calendar starts.
It does. And I want to start with your story on Avante Dickerson. And It's been an impressive setting for Nebraska and really a lot of schools in the Midwest with the number of high-level talents that are in this region between Bowlers and Fedoni and Dickerson, and Nebraska's in the thick of those commitment choices, and you have region schools and the Alabamas of the world that are all chiming in here. What was your sit down like with Dickerson? I've had a chance to cover him a little bit and see how impressive he is, but it doesn't happen every day that a Nebraska kid's getting this much attention.
Yeah, I mean, Fedoni from Council Bluffs, not a Nebraska kid, but he's getting similar attention in recruiting, right? I mean, just as connected to the state of Nebraska, essentially, as Avante is what you have with Thomas Fedoni, the tight end from Lewis Central, who grew up in Omaha and you know, has a family with deep Nebraska roots. Dickerson's family is more interestingly connected to the state of Ohio. His mom and sisters, of course, are here with him in Omaha, and he's grown up in Omaha. So enough of a connection to Nebraska to make them one of his favorites right now. But I think in sitting down with him, you know, I found him to be a really thoughtful kid. I think he's giving the proper amount of weight to this decision. Sometimes you find, in covering recruiting, you know, you find some of these guys who are juniors and seniors in high school who, you know, I think have the maturity level of like a seventh or eighth grader. And then other times you find guys who have the maturity of like a 30-year-old. And, you know, Avante Dickerson's in a good place with, you know, where he's at as he goes into making this decision. I think part of it is that he has good people around him. His coach, Brett Frent at Westside, is really involved in this process, has been there along with him every step of the way. Some coaches, you know, have so much going on with their own teams that, you know, they can lose sight a little bit of what happens with a kid like this who just has so much thrown at him. And, you know, it's interesting that Westside, which has played for the Class A title a couple times in this last decade, including in November, has not sent a guy to a Power 5 school since Collins Okafor in 2008 at Nebraska, and hasn't sent anybody to an FBS school since Nate Skoll, the lineman in 2011, signed with Tulane. So, I said it must be the coaching at Westside that continues to get those, rack up those wins. And now they do. They have Cade Haberman, who started on the varsity team as a freshman with Avante a couple of years ago, who's getting some FCS looks. Maybe he'll get some FBS looks too, scholarship offers. And then Dickerson, who is the highest rated prospect in the state of Nebraska since Baker Steinkuhler and Trevor Robinson 13 years ago.
Mitch Sherman's joining us from The Athletic. At Mitch Sherman on Twitter is where you follow him. His feature on Avante Dickerson, it's good reading. And, when you look at Nebraska and there's the home state Nebraska, the Scott Frost Nebraska, the history and tradition Nebraska that maybe some of the parents or uncles and aunts know and grew up with, and what you and I witnessed and watched and covered in college and before growing up in this state. And then there's what Nebraska is right now, and that's a team that's trying to trend upward and in year three of a new head coach. Did you get a sense from Dickerson, what reputation he's paying attention to about Nebraska? Is it the past, or is it the here and now, and the fact that it's been, the reality is they haven't been to a bowl game in 3 years?
He doesn't remember the 90s, Chris. Like, I can tell you that.
He shouldn't, because he wasn't born.
Right. He wasn't alive. You're right. There you go. Nebraska is facing an uphill battle with guys like him and Fedoni, but less of an uphill battle than they face when they go to Florida or Louisiana or Texas and recruit guys who have the attention of the teams that are at the top of the rankings and contending for the college football playoff. And in the case of Dickerson and Fedoni, multiple teams that played in the college football playoff this year are recruiting them. So Nebraska doesn't have that, and there's nothing they can say or do to even the playing field in that area. These guys, even if these kids are educated about what Nebraska was 25 years ago, it doesn't matter really at this stage. So they depend on developing relationships with these kids. And in the case of these two that we're talking about who are national recruits from Nebraska's backyard, I think they've done a great job with both of those guys. Dickerson wants to take an official visit with Keegan Johnson, Bellevue West receiver, son of Cluster Johnson, ex-Nebraska receiver. They want to take their official visits together this spring. I think that would be good for Nebraska. Knowing the way that Frost and his staff handle official visits in the spring, they don't bring guys in. They don't agree to bring guys in at that time unless they have a feeling that it can pay off with a commitment before the season starts. They would rather use those official visits for game days in the fall. Now, with Dickerson and Fedoni, it's not as essential because they can get to Lincoln very easily and will be in Lincoln if they're still on the market as recruits or, of course, committed to Nebraska for games in the fall. But I think they have a good chance with both of these guys, but neither one by any means is locked up, and it's formidable right now, especially to have LSU and Bill Bush involved with both of these recruits from the Omaha area. You really couldn't be picking a worse time to go against LSU if you're the home state school.
No, you can't. And let's be straight. Bill Bush is great at recruiting. I mean, mm-hmm. He's done that for Urban. He's done that for Coach O. His different stops. I mean, he's incredible.
Right. And Bill has reminded the coaches at Westside how many times he's visited the school. The fact that there's a couple of guys in this area and that he has family he can see when he comes and visits here too.
Yep.
Helps LSU's cause. You come and see Fedoni and Dickerson at the same time, and that makes the trip more worthwhile. Oh, and by the way, you can go to Lincoln and see loved ones. So that's a nice thing for LSU for sure. Interesting also that it was Jimmy Burrow who tipped off LSU about the presence of Avante Dickerson at Omaha Westside. Now, everybody knows about him now that he's ranked in the top 50 in the country, but it's always important, who those first schools are that reach out to you, especially when it's the first schools from out of your own region, and especially when they're one of the first schools and they're from out of your own region, and then they go and have a 15-0 season, that makes an impression on a kid. And maybe LSU got in a bit earlier with Dickerson, or their eyes were open to Avante a little bit earlier because of the connections that Jimmy Burrow has to this part of the country, and that he told Bill Bush, hey, there's a kid in Omaha that you want to go see who runs a 4.440. And, probably an hour later, Bill was on the phone with the coaches at Westside.
It doesn't hurt either that Joe felt comfortable with Bill down to LSU when it came to transferring.
No, there's a lot of good karma going for LSU right now with both of these guys. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the next, I'd say 4 to 5 months. I think both of those guys, Fedoni at Lewis Central and Dickerson at Westside, will, barring some unforeseen circumstances, will reach decisions before they start playing their senior seasons.
Mitch, about 3 minutes here. I know you've been focused on football and spring ball coming up, but you've done a lot of work in your career with Husker baseball. What's your early read here on this start for Nebraska? Have you spent much time on Husker baseball?
Listen to some of it. With Greg and Nick and the guys doing the broadcasts, enjoy listening to the games, especially when it's cold back here. I know they didn't want that weekend in San Diego to go the way they did, and now they've got a tough order in the third weekend to go play Arizona State. This is kind of the Darren Erstad model, scheduling model too, that Will Bolt has adopted, and that he wants his guys. He doesn't want to ease into the season. I think it's good to see that Will, and we'll see how Will adjusts that to his own personality. My feeling is, in knowing Will Bolt, and I covered Will Bolt's entire career, saw basically every game that he played in person as a college player. My feeling in knowing Will pretty well is that this is what he wants, and that he knows in some years, maybe where they don't have their pitching staff in a place where they expect it's going to be during the conference season, but they don't have that going in February. Maybe their bullpen isn't where they want it to be right now. He knows that it's going to lead to some tough days, but the hope is that this team gets things figured out and they are able to put it together in Big Ten play. And then in years to come, they've got the makeup and the kind of guys on the roster who accept this challenge. Not that this team hasn't accepted it, but who are more up to the challenge than what we've seen when this team has. Nebraska played well from ahead in the first game of the year. I mean, nothing wrong with getting 11 runs in the first inning of your first game. But where the struggles have come in is when they've been in tight games and when teams have started to come back and they've had to rely on their bullpen. So, I'd expect this team will mature a lot in that area, not just this year, but will be better in that way in years to come under Will Bolt.
Mitch, about a minute. What do you got working on for The Athletic? What are you focusing in on here?
Got some spring storylines coming out tomorrow on the site. I did go to the Team Jack Gala on Saturday in Lincoln. If people had a chance to see the Rex Burkhead interview that was up yesterday, if you haven't had a chance to see that, go check it out. Rex, pretty enlightening as always, and some new subjects for him to talk about, like being a father now, and how that's shaped his outlook on his involvement with the Team Jack Foundation over the years. Rex and his wife Danielle have a 15-month-old son, Jet, and then another son on the way due in May. So Rex is just one of the most enjoyable guys that I've ever had a chance to be around as a writer. Somebody who was a student athlete, doesn't matter what sport it is. So good to catch up with him. And then I've got an interesting piece coming later this week too. After the spring storylines tomorrow, on a couple other guys that I caught up to at the Team Jack Gala, one of whom hosts a radio show with you sometimes. So big Jeremiah will be making an appearance in The Athletic, along with Kenny Bell, toward the end of this week with some thoughts on the Huskers.
Mitch, take care. Thanks for the time today, bud.
All right, thanks, Chris.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Awesome stuff from Mitch Sherman. Good to spend some time with him. We are down in the rail yard tomorrow. We are at the Hail Varsity headquarters. Really cool documentary that's dropped today. 50 years of Omaha Royals baseball. And you have 50 Summers is the film that is out on the Storm Chasers. So we'll check in with the producer tomorrow. We are efforting some baseball people tomorrow as well. Pretty cool to talk with Russ Landy in about 20 minutes. He is a longtime NFL insider and scout, worked for Cleveland, worked for the Rams, doing work with the CFL now, but he is in Indianapolis at the NFL Combine. So we will hear from Russ Landy coming up. Kick things off. How pivotal is 2020 for Scott Frost? I don't ask that. 24/7 has a list of coaches that the infamous, it's pivotal. And you know what? It is. It's important. It's important to have a good year. And good is up to your definition. What did Saul Goodman say? Define good. It's good that I'm alive. Is it good I'm locked with Heisenberg in the basement? No. Okay, define good. To me, defining good for Nebraska football in 2020 is you get a lead, you hang on to a lead. You get up 20 on somebody, you hang on by 20. And just be confident. Go out there and just keep on shooting arrows, man. And let Adrian get back to his freshman weight, do his thing, and let's see this thing get high-flying. See him go downtown with some throws. You know, I'm excited about it. It's going to be fascinating. And spring ball is our appetizer before we get to the fall. Real quick, reminder about your friends at the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety. One out of three fatal crashes involves an impaired driver. Driving drunk, buzzed, or high, never acceptable. And law enforcement officers are working around the clock to stop it with sobriety checkpoints and saturation patrols. As a driver, make the correct choice of a non-alcoholic drink or have a pre-selected designated driver. Be smart. Start the conversation. Who's driving home? Brought to you by the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Okay. So a guy that may need a drink is Fred Hoiberg. And a fan base that may need several drinks is the Nebraska basketball crew. Another rough one last night. Nebraska is now 7-20. 71-59 loss to Illinois. Maybe you're not shocked by that. I think the line was 12.5, 13.5. Nebraska right there. And I don't know how or why, but Nebraska gets smoked at the end of half situations where people hit threes on them with the clock winding down, and then some a-hole launches it from half court, drills it barely out of his hands, five-minute review, and Trent Frazier hits a three from three-quarters court, and you're down six. All that being said, you're at the 12-minute mark, all right? And you're tied. You are tied. You were down seven. You were down six. You were down a few buckets. But Nebraska was able to kind of gather, stay focused, and be right there. The deficit was a little rough. Illinois hit a couple of untimely threes if you're a Nebraska fan. And then, I mean, you got down 28-18, but you keep fighting. You put a run together 13-3 to tie things up 31 apiece. You're tied at 46. And I just, Nebraska was sloppy with the basketball last night. You had no comeback, so that's to be expected. Nebraska got all out of sorts. Nebraska, again, missed 77,000 layups. And I'm watching this game with my grandmother last night. And they get to the rim, and it's not just a Hanif Cheatham. It's not just a Green. It's not just – but, man, it seems like some of the same dudes, Deshaun, they get to the rim, and it either gets swatted or they're too hard with it because they're expecting contact. And with Cheatham – every time I see him go in, I'm like screaming, dunk it. But after that, the way he goes up, it's like he'll lean back and they're way off. And this, again, is not Piñata time on any cheat him. He scored 14 points. He plays his butt off. He is really doing his best to help find their way out of this hell that is now a 12-game losing streak. All that being said, you guys got to be better at the rim. You just do, and it's in their head. It's in their head now, period. They don't expect to make it. Ivan has been really impressive. That guy is surging. Double-double for him last night. He went against Kofi and held his own. Did pretty well. So I like that. But Nebraska, it just doesn't fail during this losing streak. You're looking for guys to take and make a big shot. But they always pick the wrong time. To me, it feels like. And a guy like Burke is usually the guy who's courageous enough to shoot it, but he isn't going to make it. And you're tied at 46, and you take a quick possession, you launch a three, you're nowhere near it, rebound, outlet, transition, bucket. And that's the downward spiral. And somebody's got to shoot it in a tie game situation. But during this losing streak, Nebraska has pressed in that moment. It turns into hero ball versus passing the thing around, finding the best shot versus the, I'm going to launch a three, bro, from top of the key. And that can incense a lot of Nebraska fans. Now, if it goes in, shut up, Schmidt, I get it. But there's too many times where it's a tie game or a close game where Nebraska urinates on a possession, period. They do it, and then that 3-point difference turns into five, it turns into seven, and it's just not poised basketball. You've done everything in your power to beat the odds, stay within striking distance. You had no business without Cam Mack being in that game, being tied with 13 minutes left. But because of your guts and your heart, you are. So give yourself the benefit of the freaking doubt and take a better shot or make a shot. And if Nebraska, for the love of God, would make some layups, they could be better. And I'm not expecting this team to challenge for the postseason, clearly, or even win a lot of games. But they can save themselves a little bit of pain just by better choices. But it's gone from bad to worse with the choices in some key moments. But, I mean, Hanif's playing hard. Ivan's doing his thing. We'll see if Cam gets back. We'll be down at Longwell's for Ohio State. Russ Landy coming up. NFL insider. Your chance at DeBebe tickets. He is going to be at PBA in March. You're listening for that sounder. Hail Varsity winds down hour one, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
10 minutes away, we'll head to Indianapolis NFL Combine. It is Russ Landy coming up. Some thoughts on Joe Burrow and more discussion about Nebraska football and the pivotal season that is 2020 per 24/7 Sports. You can email Chris at HaleVarsity.com and dial us up at 466-3776-866-375-5865. Was that somebody who wanted DeBebe seats?
Someone calling for DeBebe, yep.
So did they hear you play the sounder yet?
No, they didn't.
Well, what's the sounder sound like? Because clearly my phone's not working, so I can't crank out DeBebe. And listen, I'm an old, heavyset dude that is a bit out of touch on DeBebe's lyrics, so... Yay or nay? You a DeBebe guy?
I haven't heard him, to be completely honest.
Okay. Yeah. It's edited, and if it's not, Elijah Herbal, come on down. Okay. Okay, kill it, please. No, it's good. I'm nervous. There's the infamous moment of 2009 where I'm on the air. We play a drop from Austin Powers from Fat Bastard. He says the S word and all hilarity ensues. Not going to have that moment happen again. Not on my watch, not on your watch. So let's play a game. You have the CFP, or make that CFB home. It's a good Twitter handle. Enjoy them. They have put together the top 10 list of most vacated wins all time in college football. So, Damon, play along. Who comes in at number 10? What program comes in at number 10 with the four? They have four vacated wins all time.
Is that Florida? Is that a Florida school?
It is not Florida. It is the University of Cal.
Cal.
Don't know when Cal was naughty. Probably in the Charles White era, maybe. Russell White. Russell White was his running back. Cal in late 1990. In at number 9 is SMU at 10, of course. Syracuse in at number 8, 11.
What'd they do?
You know, I don't think they were naughty during the McNabb era. I don't recall. They beat Clemson a couple Thursday nights, you know, many years ago. Ohio State comes in at number 7 with 12. Thank you, Terrell Pryor. Florida State in at number 6 with 12. SC, yes, Matt Leinart and your lazy eye, 14. 14 vacated wins. Pete, you know what to do. North Carolina in at 16. The Butch Davis, John Blake era. When did Notre Dame vacate wins? They have 21 of them.
Like the 20s?
No. Was this the... Did they have to vacate wins in the 90s? The Lake Dawson era? Bama in at 21. Your vacated win national champion of all time is Ole Miss at 33. Somehow Penn State and Joe Pa don't make the cut on this. Quarterbacks, that's the buzz for the 2020 NFL draft. How do they stack up? Russ Landy, NFL Insider, next.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. NFL Combine going on, and guy we've talked to quite a bit over the years, and he is the U.S. scout for the Calgary Stampeders. Long history of work also in the NFL. Russ Landy is back with us. Can find and follow Russ on Twitter, at Russ Landy. Russ, good to talk to you again. How you been?
You know, life is great. So excited to be chatting with you and be here in Indianapolis searching for some players, maybe come up Canada and help the Stampeders win a great cup.
Russ, when you look at the combine and how things have evolved and where things sit right now, let's talk about the 2020 class. Just early returns from you. Do you think this class has a chance to be pretty memorable?
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I mean, I think a lot of people have been really focusing on the depth at the receiver position, which is unbelievable. And there's obviously some good quarterbacks, but I think when you look around, there's also defensive linemen, tight ends. There's a ton of depth at tight end. There's a lot of really good talent in this draft. I think a few years from now, you're going to look back, and I think most people will see that this was a draft that allowed teams to find three or four quality players at different positions if they do their homework and are really on top of things.
Russ Landy's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Follow him with the draft. Can do so at Russ Landy on Twitter. Russ, I want to get into quarterbacks. That's always a position of need and want, and you hope you hit a home run with it. I'm interested here in your years in the NFL and even now in the CFL. When you're scouting, man, what are two or three things that you look for on film, but you also look for off field with the quarterback? How do you get that pick right?
If I had the magic answer to that, I'd be earning millions and millions of dollars. But I think it really comes down to, for quarterbacks, There's so much you don't know because it's above the shoulders. But when I'm watching film, I want to see a quick release. I want to see the ability to be an accurate thrower to all areas of the field. And I want to see a guy who doesn't get sort of trapped and sort of can't function quickly, sort of sitting there in the pocket and doesn't know what to do. I want a decisive guy, gets rid of the ball fast, is an accurate throw, and doesn't put it in bad spots. Then I really want to delve in when I can talk with the kid and stuff and find out their mental makeup. How smart are they? How quickly do they pick up football? Are they a guy that can adjust and can handle change? There's so many things that go into it. And that's why finding a quality quarterback is so difficult, because it's rarely the physical that determines their success. It's almost always above the shoulders and their ability to process things quickly on the field. Despite, there are many guys who are very fast when you put them on a board, but as soon as you put them on the field and there's blitzers around them and the pocket is squeezing, they're not as quick thinking. And that's what's so difficult to truly evaluate.
You can simulate as much as you can, but you can't simulate Sunday. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You're not going to risk him getting beat up in practice. Russ Landy's with us talking NFL draft, Hail Varsity Radio. Russ, of course, with the Calgary Stampede, a scout for the CFL squad, and follow him on Twitter at Russ Landy. Russ, I want to get into this group of quarterbacks, and when you look at the projections out there, and you've done a lot of projections yourself over the years, you have Burrow and Tua and Herbert and Jordan Love and a couple of other kids and Jake Fromm and Eason. I want to start with Tua, and what's your early thought on Tua? I know the injury question's there, but when I watch him, he is so good in the pocket. He's so good on the move. What do you think of his chances beyond the great success he had at Alabama? I mean, how high can this ceiling be for Tua?
Well, I think it's really high. I think if you only looked at film and injuries and stuff like that were not part of it, I think there are a lot of teams that would have him above Joe Burrow. I think the issue is, historically, and I think analytics nowadays makes this even a bigger issue, is players that have been hurt consistently in college are almost always hurt in the pros on a regular basis. So that's the big red flag with Tua, is it's not just for one injury, it's that it's happened one time after another, and that leads to generally guys that are hurt one time after another in the NFL. When you watch the film, I mean, I was very shocked at how much I liked him. His pocket awareness, his ability to slide, move within the pocket, reset his feet, get rid of the ball quickly and accurately. He's got a strong arm. He's thickly built. I think Tua has all the traits to be a very good starting quarterback in the NFL. But I will admit that injury history would have me very nervous about taking him, especially not so much that he doesn't have the talent to be there, but generally if you're picking in the top 10 or 12 picks of the draft, it's not just because you're missing a quarterback. Generally you have a bad team, which means you have a bad offensive line, which means he's going to get hit. If he's going to be successful, he's going to go to a team that's got a pretty good offensive line and a very creative offensive coordinator who's going to build an offense to where the ball is out quickly and this kid doesn't take a lot of hits. So I love the kid as a talent. I'm very nervous about his ability to be a healthy, long-term option in the NFL.
I got a kick out of Joe Burrow's Twitter yesterday, contemplating retirement because he measured 9 inches when it comes to his, you know, the size of his hands. Where are you at with hand size, my friend Russ? Do you buy into it? I mean, is that something you're high on, or do you just look at a kid's ability?
Well, obviously, you look at a kid's ability, and I think too much is being made of that teams base their entire grades on hand size. No, but what it is historically, if a guy's hands are in that 7.5 to 8 to 8.25 range, there's a very, very low number of quarterbacks ever that have been successful, if any, with tiny hands. 9 has always been the threshold of, if you're above 9, it's really not a concern. It's when you're down in that 7.75, 8, 8.25, that teams start getting nervous, and especially teams that play in bad weather. But it's just based on historical fact that you can look back and see that there are very few quarterbacks, if any, with hands in that 8-inch range that are successful. And that's why teams check it out. They want to know about it. If a kid's at 9 teams aren't worried about. That's fine. There have been a ton of quarterbacks with 9-inch hands, 8 7/8, 9 1/8 that have been fine. They get concerned when you're 8 and under. That's the real concern. May sound crazy, but when all the numbers over the years point to that, there is something to it.
What do you think of Burrow, and how does he project to you to the next level?
You know, I like a lot of things about Burrow. I mean, he's a very, very instinctive quarterback, has an unreal feel for pressure within the pocket. He's athletic enough to not only avoid the pressure, but he can jump out and make plays on the move. He's got a quick release. He's an accurate thrower. My big concern, and this is part of what I want to see, I know he probably isn't going to throw here at the combine, but at his pro days, and I don't know if I'll be able to attend it, but is to find out what's his arm really like. And when I say that, I'm not a big believer in having to have a cannon for an arm. I think that's overrated. I think some of the best quarterbacks in the last 20 years, whether it was a guy like a Mark Bulger or a guy like Kurt Warner or even a guy like Philip Rivers, none of them would ever qualify as one of the top 5 or 10 arm strength guys in the NFL during their best seasons, but they were still very productive. So I don't think you have to have a cannon, but I at least want you to have an arm where you can make every NFL throw with zip on the ball, because if you can't, then my offense becomes limited, and when your offense is limited in where it can throw the ball, it becomes easier to defend. So I just want to see, does Burrow have the arm to make all the throws? As long as he does, there's not a lot to make you worried about this kid. He's done a lot of really good things on film, makes you very confident that he can be a quality starter. He really impressed me a lot.
Russ Landy, a few more minutes with us, Hale Varsity Radio scout in the CFL, and you follow him on Twitter at Russ Landy at the NFL Combine. We're getting his thoughts on this 2020 draft class. How big a gap, Russ, is there between Tua, Burrow, and then some of the other candidates? Or are you a guy who looks at Herbert and his size, the offense he's coming out of? Do you like Herbert? Do you like Love, Eason, at Washington, Fromm? Is this a banner quarterback class, even if you get past Tua and Burrow?
You know, I think it's an intriguing one. I think Fromm is the guy that's sort of getting overlooked here. This is a guy that I think mentally he's tremendous. I think his ability to throw from different arm trajectories when he doesn't have a perfect pocket is really good. Again, like Burrow, he's a guy I want to see that live throw so I can determine arm strength. I think from watching film that he's got a pretty strong arm. I think he's a guy that could really have a very productive NFL career. Herbert is an interesting guy because the release quickness is there, the arm strength is there, the athleticism is there. When I watch him on film, there's something there that makes me wonder, is this guy going to be a quality starter? And I don't have concerns about the leadership or smarts. It's just I don't see a guy that, when I watch him, he is constantly the guy that makes the big play in the key situation. I think he's a talented kid. I think with the right coach, he's got a chance. But I do think once you get beyond those first two, every quarterback has a major question, whether it's Fromm with the arm strength, whether it's Herbert just overall. I don't get a feeling that this is a franchise guy when I watch him. When I look at a guy like Eason probably has more physical talent, just release quickness, arm strength than any quarterback in the draft. Why was he at a different school? Why did he have to leave and transfer out to Washington? Why was he a one-year starter? Those things concern me. Jordan Love, I'm a nice quarterback. Nothing I've seen from him indicates to me that this guy's a first-round pick that people are talking about. So it's an interesting class, but there is, to me, a definite drop-off from those first two to the next group.
How does Chase Young translate? He was up close and personal at Memorial Stadium this year, loaded Ohio State team. I love Okuda as well in the secondary, but is Young a guy in that, I don't want to say Sue ilk, but I look at Young's versatility. He's good against the run. He's great off the edge. Do you like Young as one of these broke the mold type guys?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd say break the mold, just because especially with the fact that every year there seems to be a kid from Ohio State that's elite in the two Boses. So, but in terms of an elite guy, I mean, he's a pretty special player. I mean, he, other than that rare elite initial quickness that neither he nor Joey Bosa have, he's got everything. I mean, He knows how to play with a good pad level. He can rush inside and outside with good pad level. He has strong but quick, nimble hand use. He can bull rush. He can get the corner. He can turn and dip on the corner and get around. He plays with great intensity. He's a ferocious guy taking on blockers against the run. I think this is a guy who should be a very productive rookie, and I could see second or third year in the league, I could see him blossoming into a Pro Bowl player. So if I'm sitting there in the top two or three and I am not drafting a quarterback, I don't know how you're not taking this kid. This kid is an impact player. He looks the part. He plays the part. He does everything you could ever ask as a defensive end, other than, like I mentioned, he does not have that rare special initial quickness.
Russ Landy's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, talking NFL draft. He's at the Combine, at Russ Landy on Twitter. A.J. Epenesa, what's your book on him?
You know, he's a tough guy to get a feel for. I know there was a lot of talk of him coming into the year challenging Chase Young, but I think that's sort of been put to rest. I think when you watch Epenesa, you see a highly competitive, powerful defensive end. I don't see a guy who's as versatile in terms of hand use. When you look at him, when you see Chase Young, there's a demonstrative difference between how they use their hands, how they defeat blocks. I like Epenesa. To me, he's a power defensive end. I don't think he's ever going to be a dominant all-around pass rusher. I look at him as a guy who should become a quality starting end. I don't think he's in that same ballpark as Chase Young. And the other interesting thing is then you have another pass rusher from the Big Ten, Yetur Gratos-Matos, from Penn State, who is not the power guy or powerful or consistent player that Epenesa was, but he might have a little more upside. He's got a little bit more juice athletically. He can run. Like, when he gets to that corner, he can rip through it, and he can explode to the quarterback. Like I said, as a player in college, he was not as good. But in terms of athlete, build, potential, I think there's more there in terms of high-end ceiling when I look at him than when I look at Epenesa. But Epenesa, there's lower risk in terms of he's going to be a good starter. Matos could become an elite guy or could become a guy that frustrates you to no end because he doesn't put it all together.
You got four Huskers that are invited to the Combine: Darian Daniels, Carlos, and Khalil Davis, and Lamar Jackson. Any of those Huskers on your radar, or if maybe not on your radar, is there any buzz about them? It's been a while since Nebraska's had this many guys at the Combine.
Well, I think Lamar Jackson's a guy. I mean, obviously the name gets people going, oh, wow, Lamar Jackson. But right. I think when you look at him play football, this is a kid that doesn't get the credit he's due, I think, because of the name Lamar Jackson. Because I think people go, oh, he's not the quarterback. He's a good football player. I think he's going to do very well here in Indianapolis. I think he's going to be a guy that impresses people. I could see him going higher than people anticipate in the draft. I like him a lot. And I'll just throw out this for the Nebraska fans. One guy to keep an eye on in terms of CFL, that's coming out of Nebraska this year. He may want to go to the NFL and may get an opportunity, but that receiver, Mike Williams, he's an intriguing guy that I saw down at the Tropic Bowl. I think he's a guy that might have a chance of playing in Canada. I think he'll get an opportunity in the NFL as a free agent, but I think in Canada, I think he has a chance to be a very productive player.
Russ, where do you maybe initially look at Lamar going, Lamar Jackson?
You know, I mean, I think there's a chance in that second round, but I think more likely in that third to fourth round area. I think he has a lot of the tools you want. I want to see a little explosive. I want to see that, does he have that burst to where if he's out of position, he can still close in time to make a play on the ball. That's what I want to see with him.
Russ is in Indy. Russ Landy at Russ Landy. Russ, awesome to get caught up. Thanks for your time today.
You got it, Chris. Thanks, as always, for having me on. I look forward to chatting in the future.
It's Russ Landy live from Indianapolis. Good to hear from him. Thoughts on Lamar Jackson. His take on the quarterbacks. Pretty good stuff from Russ. We'll spend a little bit more time here from Joe Burrow. Jerry Jeudy making waves. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Good stuff from Russ Landy up in Indianapolis. He mentioned a very deep wide receiving core. Jerry Jeudy's incredible. How he can catch the football on a crossing route. have two steps on a defender, and then go, I don't know, 70 yards for a touchdown. CeeDee Lamb is incredible. You have other wideouts and tight ends. We will do another sit-down with Russ Landy as we get closer to the NFL draft. We'll hear from Joe Burrow in a moment, but this is potentially a storm brewing for Alabama wideout Jerry Jeudy. So you have Jonathan Jones. He is a senior NFL reporter with CBS Sports. And this morning he tweeted out that Jerry Jeudy, the stud wideout for Alabama, wears a Star of David pendant around his neck. Jeudy was asked about the significance of it. He says, some people shortened his last name to Jew, so he wears the necklace now. I'm not Jewish, is what Jeudy said. So I've checked out social media, because that is the authority on all things. And you have some folks of the Jewish faith taking this in stride and not offended, saying, well, we'll make him honorary. And you have some gifts of Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm. You have some snippets of Adam Sandler reminding the world O.J. Simpson, not a Jew. I am not Jewish. I adhere to the feelings and reaction of this to those folks in the Jewish faith. And if you want to be PO'd about it, you're right. If you want to just like say no big deal, that's your take as well. I am absolutely sidestepping this. But here's what I think. I don't think Jerry Jeudy meant to offend. That's what I think. I haven't sat down with Jerry Jeudy. Do you need to be a little more socially conscious? Yeah. Are you wearing the Star of David because it's a cool nickname thing? Yeah, that's what it looked like. Here's the full commentary from a top 10 pick, likely.
Oh, so my last name, Jeudy. People sometimes call me short for a Jew, like one Jew. So I just got a Jewish star. So, yeah, I'm not Jewish, though.
All right, so that is, that's it. You've had a lot of podium time today. But, yeah, I mean, folks are going to be ticked off by it. And if you're Jerry Jeudy, I would get with my agent and say, look, bro, sorry, didn't mean to offend. Made sense with the nickname I was given. He didn't go Costanza and start calling himself the Jew. That's my take on it. Jeudy just needs to wake the heck up a little bit. And listen, if a guy wants to wear a Star David in honor David, good on you. But, hey, what's your nickname? Well, I'm the Jew. I mean, he's honest. I guess that'll give him some points when it comes to interview time with the NFL Combine. I hope this thing doesn't turn into a tsunami. But so far, so good. There's not much hatcheting going on with social media. The guy having a little bit of fun with the sit-down process and the media is Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow was great yesterday with the tweet we read you. When it comes to small hands, baby. Well, Burrow's comments here on the the hand. Here is Joe. The only thing missing was a half-finished scotch. And that cigar.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these measurements, you can take so much from them. If it's a glaring issue on film with turnovers, yeah, it's probably an issue. But, you know, I didn't have a lot of fumbles or anything like that. So I just tried to, you know, make a little joke out of it. I think the only thing with the hands is if you have a lot of fumbles, and I didn't have a lot of fumbles. So I think it's a non-factor. I don't get paid to, you know, talk about measurements and analyze the measurements. I get paid to play football. So that's what I'm going to do.
Good for you, Joe Burrow. You worry about it. More on Burrow when it comes to the NFL draft and there is that question out there. Maybe we'll connect with Zach Taylor. Doubtful. He's a little busy. But with Burrow, I mean, there are some guys. Think of Jerry Maguire. Kush didn't want to go to Denver. He'll either ski or swim, or excuse me, ski or surf. But like, you had Eli Manning not want to go to San Diego. He wanted to go to New York. Even though he was picked number one, he was flip-flopped first and fourth pick. All the way back in the 04 draft, Phillip's still cracking on the minivan right now, trying to find an NFL home as San, or L.A. has moved on from him. But Burrow's not really worried about where he's going. He won't hold out because he doesn't want to go to a location.
Yeah, of course I want to be the first pick. You know, it's that's every kid's dream. You know, I've worked really, really hard for this opportunity, and I'm blessed to be in this position, and a lot of people helped me get here. Yeah, I'm not going to not play. I'm a ball player. Whoever picks me, I'm going to go show up.
So Cincinnati is a topic, and Joe Burrow is from the southeast part of the state of Ohio. He raised a ton of money for the food bank in southeast Ohio because the region he grew up in, Athens, I mean, folks need some help. Folks in that area need help. Joe Burrow is very cognizant of that, but more from Burrow on potentially playing for Cincinnati.
Yeah, absolutely. It's two hours, 15 minutes from my house, and I could go home for dinner if I wanted to. Not a lot of pro athletes could get to do that. I'll play whoever for whoever drafts me. You know, I'm just not going to be presumptuous about, you know, what they want to do. It's the draft. You guys have been covering it for a long time. You never know what's going to happen.
I think he'll end up in Cincinnati, and the fight right now I'm wondering about is Detroit trade up. Do they go get a quarterback with Miami? Does Tua end up with Miami? We heard Russ Landy talk a lot about Tua, and there's a monster wow factor. And Tua is good outside the pocket, good inside the pocket. Tua is breakable. Miami's offensive line, it could be Olay time. Let's get back to Lamar Jackson. And I'm interested because, you know, where does Lamar end up for Nebraska? And we talked to Russ about 25 minutes ago. And Lamar is the best chance to be a high draft pick for Nebraska. Really, since you had a really good 2015 draft where you had Amir go in the second round, you had Malik Collins go in the second round, and you eventually had Randy Gregory go. So you had three Huskers pick, and then you had Vincent Valentine go in the third round. So, I mean, you had a hell of a good 2015 draft for Nebraska. But other than that, man, it's been bread and water for a lot of Huskers. But Russ Landy has been doing this a long time, his take on Lamar Jackson. Didn't really get into the Davis twins or Darian Daniels, probably day three guys, but there is a chance for Lamar to scoot up.
You know, I mean, I think there's a chance in that second round, but I think more likely in that third to fourth round area. I think he has a lot of the tools you want. I want to see a little explosive. I want to see that. Does he have that burst to where if he's out of position, he can still close in time to make a play on the ball?
I dig it. Lamar's got all the attributes. Does he translate to the NFL? Good question. So, there we are. Matt checks in here, and I retweeted the tweet from our old buddy Kevin Suits at 10-11 earlier, a couple of hours ago. And it's been historically bad year for Husker hoops. Here's what's crazy. The attendance is 15,000 and change at PBA. And you had Matt check in, announced or scanned with the tickets. So that's a good question. There wasn't 15K there for Michigan State. I don't know what's going to happen Thursday for Ohio State. It's an 8 o'clock tip. I think the weather won't be awful. Ohio State's a good ball club. You're going to go watch. But if things aren't entertaining and intriguing, and it turns into a Pinata show, you're leaving in halftime. I get it. You're at that point as a Nebraska basketball fan. Let's wrap this segment here. Don't forget, Damon Barr, our political correspondent, will play Let's Talk About a Democratic Debate as if they were quarterbacks for the upcoming NFL draft. Are you ready for that next segment?
I'm prepared, yeah. I've taken notes.
Last time we played...
Mm-hmm. I was on the spot.
It was on the spot, but last time we played, I mean, we laid out if a Democratic candidate was a college football team.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still holding true to Trump being USC?
I think so.
I would go Trump more Bama.
Yeah, that was the kind of dichotomy there. Trump, Bama, Ellis, or USC. Mm-hmm. It was kind of tricky. It ended up on my personal opinion of the school in the end.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine. So we will play if your Democratic candidate was a quarterback in the 2020 draft. Damon Barr extraordinaire will fill us in shortly. Here's Fred Hoiberg last night. Quick recap. Nebraska falling to Illinois. Not enough mustard left for the Big Red. But they had their moments.
Yeah, I thought, considering what we found out before the game with Cam, I thought our guys went out and battled extremely hard all the way to the end. Proud of them for that. They are continuing through a tough stretch. Come in every day and work on getting better and continue to come out and play with great intensity and great effort. Obviously, we'd like the execution better, but when you're missing your guy that's got the ball in his hands between 35 and 38 minutes every game, you're going to struggle with some of those possessions. I thought when we moved it, got the ball shifted side to side, we had some really quality possessions out there.
They did. Tie ball game, 13 and change, 46 apiece. Always that one possession. All right, Damon Barr, come on down. Politics and football. Hail Varsity rolls forward on a Tuesday. We're presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Programming note. Going to be on the road tomorrow down at the Hail Varsity headquarters in the rail yard. So excited about that. Then on the road Thursday ahead in Nebraska, Ohio State, Chris Schmidt, Damon Barr. Do you have any political music you want to get into?
Let's just music. What would you play? What would you want?
I think there is the Faber College theme in my folder from Animal House.
Okay.
We can do that. It may set the mood. It may set the tone for one Damon Barr. You can follow Damon on Twitter at Damon Barr with two R's. And Damon's our resident political guy. I got to talk politics in the morning over on KFOR, and I enjoy the heck out of it. But I'm more reporting with an occasional opinion. I will be watching tonight. Nothing?
I don't know where to look.
just type in Faber College. Yeah,
it's not showing up when I do that.
So. Oh, no. All right. Fine.
We'll do it live.
So what I'm getting at here is, Damon, you're 21.
I'm 21.
You like Indian food?
I do. It's good.
And you're kind of into your rum.
Yes, a big rum fan.
And you're a savvy, smart, sophisticated communicator. You can write, you can talk, you can do news, you follow politics.
Yeah, you could say
you that. You are an energized millennial, brother.
That's exactly what I guess I am.
You're like, you used the M word on me. I appreciate you. Okay, so let's get to it, brother.
All right.
You have the Dem debate stage. And let's go to it. First and foremost, the Democratic stage tonight, give me a candidate that is most like Tua.
Most like Tua? I'm going to go with Warren here for a couple
of
reasons.
You're going to say Elizabeth Warren is the Tua on the Democratic stage tonight.
That's right. Because when you
look, the candidate was a quarterback and why with Damon Barr.
When you look back to when Tua's year started, everyone thought he was going to win the Heisman. They thought Bama was going to win it all, and they thought Tua was amazing. And that's kind of how Warren started out before we got into this whole primary, before the debate started, before the polls actually started to run. A lot of people, especially on Twitter, were saying that Warren is looking like the front runner here, and it's going to be a race for who can beat Warren. And that's kind of how it was with Tua. And then as you got towards the end of the season, Tua gets hurt. His play isn't as spectacular as some of the rest of the field. And I feel like that's exactly what happened with Elizabeth Warren here. She's not polling as high as you would have expected if you took into consideration what was being said about her before, you know, the season of primaries began. So that's kind of where I draw the line between
Warren's got better Tua hips right now.
Yeah, that's true. She does. Than Tua.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Look at you.
I put my
work expectation into this. Versus the reality from Damon Barr. Okay, so you say Elizabeth Warren equals Tua. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go down the list here. And Justin Herbert from Oregon, 6'6", long hair, dropped 42 on Nebraska in the first half back in 2017.
Yeah.
And found a way with his legs to beat Wisconsin.
All right. Well, this is a bit of a stretch for Herbert here because I haven't watched the most of him during his entire college career, but I equated him most to Bloomberg, actually, because just for the sole reason that I figure, okay, he has 4 years at Oregon. He is pretty much set to have a fantastic career if he's a good quarterback with 4 years at an Oregon offense. And that's kind of where Bloomberg is. He's rich. He's spent over $100 million on ads so far for these primaries. I feel like he has the work put in ahead of him to do this thing, and that's kind of where I feel like Herbert comes from Oregon. He has the Oregon offense work in his portfolio that's going to add to his stock.
Look at you. How about Jacob Eason from Washington?
I didn't really pin a guy for Eason. I will say
Eason started off well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a quarterback early in his career that got to a college football playoff, and then Washington and Pete, I mean, they limped to 7-6 this year.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd have to, just for the sake of,
you
know,
is he a Yang guy?
Yeah, he's a Yang gang right there. Okay. That's where I'd put him.
You said Yang gang.
Yang gang, yes.
Okay, just making clear. you're uncomfortable. Sorry about that. Okay, how about Jordan Love?
Jordan Love. Out of Utah State?
Out of Utah State.
Let's call him an Amy Klobuchar, let's say. Not much national knowledge about him.
But if you've watched, you're impressed.
If you've watched, you're impressed, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. That works out well. Mm-hmm. You got a Jake Fromm for me. Jake Fromm, and we heard mm-hmm. Russ talk about hand size, hands, baby. And Fromm right there, I mean, his hand size, he's just around shy of 9 inches. Mm-hmm. But Fromm, again, young quarterback, insane talent around him, good quarterback, mm-hmm. but a far cry from what Georgia was 2 years ago.
I actually gave Fromm the Pete Buttigieg for Mayor Pete, because when you read about Fromm and his draft stock, you hear he could be a really good system quarterback. And when I think about Pete, I think, okay, he'll do what the party wants him to do. And that's my opinion of Pete. So that's where that connection gets drawn from.
Okay. Now I got to ask Joe Burrow.
I have multiple reasons for this that exist outside of my own personal beliefs. I'm equating Burrow to Bernie. For one, if you would have told me last year that Joe Burrow leads LSU to a national championship and wins the Heisman, I wouldn't believe it, just based off the fact of what are the odds of that happening.
And he went 10-3 and was okay, but mm-hmm. lost in a 70-point shootout.
Exactly. And you look at Bernie Sanders a year ago, and you tell me he wins three of the three first primaries, and he looks like he's the front runner. I'm like,
he's going to win Texas and California.
I was like, okay, I wish, but, you know, it's kind of crazy to see. And you don't really see things like this all the time with someone who's so anti-establishment, like being a political leader. And you didn't really see Joe Burrow 3 years on the bench at Ohio State transferring to LSU winning a Heisman. So that's kind of where I separate my personal opinions from the
objectives. So you are flat out with the reality that is happening. This actually happened, and Burrow had a great season
yeah.
with a lot of talent around him.
I don't know if I expected it.
No, that the unexpected, the out of nowhere. Like, Joe Burrow is a really good quarterback, but is he 15-0 great?
Right.
That trounces Clemson, that beats up on Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost like, huh? Yeah. Beats up on Oklahoma. And he's poised for the number one pick. He will be the number one pick out of Ohio. So, yeah, we just played that game. And during the Democratic debates, we check in with Damon Barr. And if your candidate was a quarterback for the NFL draft is what we played. Last time it was if your Democratic debate candidate was a college football team. We may have to go, when things get narrowed down, we may have to go if your candidate was a member of the Houston Astros.
There you go. Who's AJ Hinch?
I don't know who's Cora, who's Altuve. I mean, we go down the, we can play this game all day. Your chance at DeBay tickets coming up at PBA shortly. Good stuff from you, Damon Barr. Well thought out. Hail Varsity winds down at Tuesday, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big one in the Big Ten tonight. I will be... You got a workout. Yeah, I'm serious. Got a workout coming up at 7. So I will have one eye on the debates. I will have another eye on Iowa, Michigan State. Sparty, back in the rankings. Iowa, trying to flex. And then you got a busy day of basketball tomorrow with the Big Ten Huskers and Ohio State on Thursday. Great to spend a few minutes with you on Tuesday here with Hail Varsity. Mitch Sherman was incredible. Good stuff on Avante Dickerson. We love spending about 15 minutes with Russ Landy in Indianapolis, breaking down the combine for us and kind of projecting things. His thoughts on the quarterbacks, very thorough with the quarterbacks. We'll get some more thoughts from him. He was really good on Epinesa and Chase Young and the kid out of Ohio, I should say, out of Penn State as well. We'll spend a few more minutes with him as we get closer to the draft. And some glowing things to say about Lamar Jackson. Still some show me there with Lamar, but really impressed and says Lamar could be a guy that goes higher than expected, i.e. a second round. So you're welcome to check out that interview with Lamar Russ Landy on Lamar Jackson. Can do so. Log on ESPNLincoln.com. The on-demand will have that. You'll have some SoundCloud snippets. The Damon Barr will get put up on ESPN Lincoln on Twitter. Can also follow us on Hail Varsity. It's Twitter account. Log on HailVarsity.com for the podcast. iTunes, where you subscribe, give us a review, and do so. And it ain't going to cost you nothing when you give us a review or subscribe to get the podcast. A lot of folks have chimed in on that. We appreciate you listening. Tomorrow, we are down in the rail yard at the home offices of Hail Varsity, 50 Summers, an incredible film detailing the 50 seasons of the Storm Chasers / Royals. So we'll talk to the director for that. Mike Babcock will be with us, efforting a few more folks. Busy Thursday as we're slated to be down at Longwell's ahead of Ohio State and Nebraska, right across from PBA. Without further ado, let's get you a pair of tickets to see DaBaby. It's going to be in March at Pinnacle Bank Arena. What do you want to do here? Caller 5? Cinco? Caller 5 right now. 466-3776. 466-3776. PBA, DaBaby, the 11th of March. Caller 5. Right now, dial in on 800-825-5865, 466-3776. 768-825-5865. A pair of DeBebe tickets. We will give away a pair the rest of this week. Caller 5 now makes it happen, as we'll get you qualified and get you a pair of those. Damon Barr is all over it. Good stuff. Mitch Sherman and Russ Landy. Mike Babcock tomorrow. I may wrangle up a dose of Dr. Petey. Missing that guy. So good stuff. Caller 5, good luck to you. And we'll talk to you next time, 4 o'clock. From the Rail Yard tomorrow with Hale Varsity.